Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Hey, this is Chad Z, roadie for Metallica, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Hey, cheers, fellas.
Cheers.
Cheers.
We are here at the wonderful HQ3, which is the smokestack, of course. Mr. Paul Moak is here, everybody.
All right.
Yay!
Hang on.
Oceans. Speech.
Oceans. What do you have to say?
I'm thinking.
Here's my speech.
Okay.
I feel like I can't even get close to you guys right now because I will get singed off the flames that are coming from your body because your show is so hot right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude.
Please tell me more.
The Gillies, is it Gillies?
Gillies.
Episode.
I love that Ethan corrected you with the wrong thing.
Yeah, but
yes, Gillies. Yes,
yes, of course. It's Gillies.
That two-part episode,
pretty good.
Mine. Well, for someone like me, it was like literally honey.
Yeah.
But then the Music Coalition, future
Kevin
yeah.
Erickson.
That one was incredible too, and I just want to say, the way that you ask the questions and the way that you follow up, y'all have such a good chemistry worked out.
You silly guy over
you.
There.
And yeah. I mean, it's some of the best stuff that y'all have done in terms of quality of content. It's not your buddy from down the street on a Tangent City, which
like
has
Paul,
value.
Like the Paul Moak episode.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Value, which has value. But I feel like I'm getting phased out.
No way.
And I'm mad about it.
You're not phased out. Look, by any means.
Instead of saying Paul,
Mom,
it's changed to Bolt.
Bolt.
Wait, there is
I've been replaced by Michael Bolt.
No,
well, here's
in.
The thing. Listen, we all know that the OG off the mic thing is Paul. You hear that crack? That was fun. Been a long day. Sorry. But we've also done
Mom.
Yeah. The meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
Yeah.
And then Bolt as well. But you're just in the family. You're the king of the castle, dude. Don't worry.
Are me, Mom, and Bolt all hanging out in the other room?
Yeah. I think you and Mom and Bolt are eating meatloaf together.
We live together.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are a little special trio, and we love just having you guys in our little GIMP box whenever we need you. We can just call upon you. We need to put the skeleton key in and take the the little apple out of your mouth. But no one can replace you, Paul.
Never.
Many try.
You are a very valued co-host. I'll say it.
Hey.
In stone.
But it was nice that you were texting us off the air and saying, wow, these last few episodes have been really great.
They really have.
I no longer can really tell. Like, I know that those episodes are great. I can't tell how they're landing with our audience.
Hmm.
I've pulled back a little bit from social media, and I definitely thought that Kevin Erickson was great.
Yeah.
Just because he was able... talking about the issues of that episode about... It's just stuff we've talked about the whole time we've been doing this podcast because it's so relevant to us as actual music makers in the world. And I was really proud of that one. Before the Kevin Erickson episode, I went back and listened to our Napster episode that we three did together.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And man, I don't know why I do this, but every time I think the thought of listening to our old episodes makes me cringe because for some reason I think they can't be as good as what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Right.
I've thought that so many times. And maybe the five times that I've gone back and dipped in and listened, I'm like, these episodes were really interesting.
Like that was good.
Yeah.
And that Napster episode I thought is as good a little document of teasing out all of that stuff as we've done. And we also did an episode on United Nations. Remember our United Nations episode?
Yeah, that was wondrous.
The Geneva Convention. Now that was something. But the big ticket company, Live Nation.
Yeah.
When that whole issue came about where Metallica intentionally sort of reselling their tickets.
Yep.
We did an episode surrounding that issue that I thought was really good too.
And yeah.
Kevin was just a good resource to have, and I think he's going to be on again in the future.
Yeah, he wants me on again for sure.
There's really only one episode that if you go back, doesn't really hold up.
Okay.
Hockey Town USA.
Oh my gosh.
I can't even imagine listening to it.
I don't know if I ever want to listen to that. I mean, that's where Noise came from.
Yeah.
I wonder if Noise. It's any good. We should listen to it.
Yeah. Why don't we put it on right now?
Is the one from our car still on?
Oh yeah, that's up there. Yeah.
Yeah, that was our Q&A.
That was
Pretty good.
That was an HQ4.
We should say, by the way, welcome to the show. We are Metal Up Your Podcast.
Yeah, by the way.
This is episode 229 in what we refer to as Tangent City. And it seems like we do these three times a year.
Really?
This is the third one.
We do this once every 4 months, it seems like. The last one was in December, and now it's April.
I feel like we need to do it like maybe once a week.
Hmm. Well, let me just tell my wife that she won't see me anymore.
Right.
And that's what I'll just live over by the drums over here.
Yeah.
But this is Tangent City, in which we talk about Metallica, but we talk about anything. We don't really plan it. We're just three dudes. We haven't gotten to see each other a lot in the last year because there was this weird thing called COVID that happened. It was like a virus.
I heard about that.
So it's just a good excuse to get together and talk about music and life and all sorts of things, including the Bolt Man, which, by the way, Ethan's been jamming Bolt Man in his car. And there would be no Boltman riff without you, because it all sprung up because you ordered a record that you wanted to send back. But my big joke was that it was actually Michael Bolton. Yeah. And you definitely did order that record.
Well, so what's funny is the record that I got wasn't even Michael Bolton. You just fabricated that and it spun off this whole deal. So I realized there is no Michael Bolton in my record collection.
Uh-oh.
So,
which is why I've been holding this box.
Dude.
There's so many things to point out here. Ethan thinks that I don't go to real record stores.
Oh, yeah.
That I only buy records on Amazon.
I mean,
shot fired.
I mean, so, what does that tape on that box say?
Well, if you're going to go buy a Michael Bolton record, you don't go to the record store.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would order it anonymously.
I would proudly do that. Are you embarrassed of Bolt? Bolt!
Okay, so you have the bigger Amazon box.
Right. Does that mean there are two albums in there?
You know, pointless plastic bubble wrap.
Right,
right. Well, that's second good for the box. Environment. Yeah.
They could literally just mail what's in your hand right now. It's way easier and smaller.
Totally. But they care.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day, everybody.
Hey, it's all cardboard. Here it is in all its glory.
It's like
Michael Bolton Gold.
So this is like a best of compilation.
Yes. I couldn't get Time, Love, and Tenderness on vinyl through Amazon.
Okay.
But I could get this baby.
Look at that.
And I just wanted to read some of these titles to you guys.
Yeah, okay, here we go.
I love it.
We have How Am I Supposed to Live Without You?
I forgot about that.
Classic. Tearjerker.
Love is a wonderful thing. How can we be lovers if we can't be friends? I mean, hit after hit.
It's
like the Black Album of Soul, of White Soul.
It's called Blue Eyed Soul,
by the way. Steel bars wrapped all around me.
Do you really know all these songs?
I owned Time, Love, and Tenderness on CD. It was the second CD I ever had.
Okay.
Time, Love, and Tenderness.
Okay.
Then you have the unmatchable. When a man loves a woman.
When a man loves a woman. Can't keep his mind on nothing else. He trades the world for the good things.
In Tallahassee, or what was it? Yeah,
Gainesville. We were talking about at the Kings Leon studio today, because I'm doing some work for them. We were talking about Gainesville bands. I literally walked out to eat lunch today, and they were talking about bands from Gainesville. I was like, wow, really? What are the odds?
Well, here's where it gets a little interesting. Flip it over to side B.
Song one, Pig Fuck.
Let me ask you this. Before you go on, Paul, let me ask you this. Is this just two sides?
Yeah, okay. Two sides. Yeah, his best of only fits on one vinyl.
Unlike 311s.
So some of the songs, there's a cover of Lean On Me, a cover of Drift Away. I Said I Loved You, But I Lied. Do you remember that song?
No.
That was Sing classic it for us, Paul. 90. Said I loved you, but I lied. Okay.
Maybe I do know that one.
But there is a song that I've never heard. I'm so curious about. Side B, track one. Can I Touch You? ...
There.
Question mark.
Oh my gosh.
Can I touch you? I love that you're asking for consent, but then it gets weird.
There. Right.
But here's the thing. We don't know where there is. I feel like Michael Bolton's a pretty respectful man.
Well, I mean, maybe the song tells us.
Maybe he has like a thing for elbows.
I don't know, guys. I think we're leaving out the visual component. Maybe it was he was sitting next to a consensual lover and he says, "May I touch you?" They nodded and he just reached out and touched him and he wrote, "There."
Well, it's a question mark. It's like, a question mark.
It's a question mark.
There?
Oh.
Or maybe he's not specifying where he wants to touch this person. Maybe it's the place. Like, let's say you're in Bolt's, you know, mansion, which is probably overlooks like an amazing like ravine or something, mm-hmm. in the ocean in the distance. Maybe they're hanging out having some, you know, Chardonnay and he says, "Can I touch you?" And then points near the jacuzzi or something. Oh,
over there.
There.
Like at a place. Oh, like. Because I was imagining Michael Bolton with his like, and I don't know why I'm seeing this in my mind's eye, but it's like a shriveled like Crypt Keeper creeper from Tales from the Crypt. He has like a Crypt Keeper finger and it's like bony and long, like it's Halloween. Yeah. And he goes, "Can I touch you?" And then he takes that finger and just puts it right in their belly button and goes, "There?
There." Yeah.
What I imagine is he says, "Can I touch you?" And the female puts her finger up to her eye socket and he goes,
there.
Well, people are, we're not here.
All
to
right, check,
shame.
The, check this out.
Okay.
The writers of Can I Touch You? ... There.
Please tell me Desmond mark. Child's in there.
You wish.
Okay.
Michael Bolton, one Robert J, also known as Mutt Lang.
Mutt Lang. That motherfucker.
One Mr. Nile Rodgers.
Oh, wow. Rogers.
And then Bernard Edwards, I'm not familiar with him.
No. Who wrote When a Man Loves a Woman? Oh, that was Percy Sledge.
Percy Sledge.
Yeah. Where is
it? Any other surprising
co-writers? No, he didn't write it. Who Andrew wrote it? Wright, Lewis Houston.
Oh, I guess Percy Sledge has performed it.
They made it popular, yeah.
Interesting.
Any other notable writers on there?
Diane Warren.
CeCe DeVille.
CeCe DeVille. Are you thinking of CeCe Winans?
No, it's CeCe DeVille. CeCe DeVille.
I'm CeCe DeVille, and I wrote...
Oh, Desmond Child is on here.
I knew he would
How
be.
How can we be lovers if we can't be friends? How about this?
I knew Des would be
Steel
on there.
Bars, Wrapped All Around Me, written by Michael Bolton, Bob Dylan?
What?
There has to be a second Bob Dylan that tried to be a writer.
Or he took some Dylan scraps and just finished it.
Or Bob he Dylan. Quoted a Dylan lyric in the song.
Well, because isn't... What's the big Darius Gosh. Rucker song? Wagon Wheel.
I Only Want to Be With You. Oh.
No, Wagon Wheel. Bob. That's a Bob Dylan song.
No, that's a...
It was an unfinished Bob Dylan song that Old Crow Medicine Show finished.
Yeah. That's right.
That motherfucker just throws away scraps that become huge songs.
I know. Dude. Like man, I wish 30 we years were, later, 4 years later.
Unbelievable.
I wish we were on YouTube because does that look gold to you?
That doesn't... Well...
Let's see.
It's like a matte finished gold. We're looking at the actual vinyl right now.
It's kind of like, it didn't look like a bar of gold.
It looks like...
It doesn't look like Willy Wonka's golden ticket.
It definitely does not.
We won't be going to get the Everlasting Gobstopper.
It looks like clay.
Yeah, it kind of has a clay.
You know what it looks like? Human clay.
Oh my God, human clay. It looks like the color
That's
of clay
Creed's second album,
that they
by the
used
way.
In the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore.
It actually brings up an interesting question, right? Because you sang a lot of those choruses just now, Paul, and I was impressed.
Yeah.
And what we've learned, because Tangent City is about, first of all, it's about being in the bus together in Tangent City, and we're curating it. If you look to your right, you'll see a Hawaiian shirt. If you look to your left, you'll see Bolt Man. And but what we've learned, because it's also educational, is that Paul's second album was Bolt Man.
Can I frame them, though, with 1 and 3?
Yeah.
Okay. 1.
You can put them in a sandwich. Yeah.
James Taylor's Greatest Hits.
Love it. Love it.
2, Michael Bolton, Time, Love, and Tenderness. Okay. I was 12 years old, okay?
Dude, don't apologize to me, man.
You don't have to give excuses.
3 and 4, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Dude, that's killer.
There we go. I'd like to imagine a young Paul Moak in Mississippi, pre-dreadlocks, jamming Don't Cry. And
Well, I was going to say, when you're listening to too much When a Man Loves a Woman, you got to put on a little fucking perfect, you got to put on a little back off bitch to cool things out a little bit. So I can't remember the order. It's amazing you remember the order, but I do remember a very similar, a record that would occupy that exact same space as the Bolt Man for you.
Okay.
With Time, Love, and Tenderness. A record I truly loved. Again, I was 11 or 12. The Bodyguard soundtrack.
Nice.
That was
Wait,
massive.
What was the hit on that?
I Will Always Love
and
You.
I Will Always Love You.
Duh.
Written by Dolly Parton.
Yep.
What was the hit on
What
that?
Was the hit?
I'm sorry.
Where were you? Listen too much Bolt.
I was listening to Michael Bolton.
I have a question. What was the big hit song in the movie Stand By Me?
I'm Every Woman.
That's what it
is. Another Whitney Houston.
It's Raining Men.
So what's a similar record for you? Bodyguard soundtrack, Time, Love, and Tenderness.
Like at that age.
He's like The Ventures.
Yeah, something cool. Ghost. Yeah. Ghost second record.
It's probably Ride the Lightning. So around, let's see, 10 or 11 years old, my family was still based in Long Beach. I'm going to have to...
I love that you gave us that little tidbit.
Well, because that was around the age I moved.
Like, my wife's from the Bay Area.
I was I like fucking fish tacos.
I know, we were right there. I was going up the 101 when I was 12.
Well, we lived off the 405 in Studebaker, but, you know.
I remember I had my first fish taco when I was 11.
At that time, I was obsessed with the Rocky IV soundtrack.
Yeah. Okay.
What's on that?
Well, you have Eye of the Tiger.
Okay.
Of course.
I met that dude. The dude that wrote that.
The guy from Survivor?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know that dude also did. Do you remember those old Budweiser commercials? The real man.
Yeah.
Genius. Oh, I love
that's
those.
Him.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Those are great.
There's like
Mr. Taxi Cab Driver.
Yeah, totally. There's like 300 of those. I have them all on a hard drive somewhere. There's one that goes, because there's like the narrator, then the guy from Survivor is like, it's like, you know, Budweiser is real men of genius. Real men of genius.
Yeah.
And there's one where it goes, that's not oil under the hood. That's just sweat from all those horses.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Used Car Lot Auto Salesman.
Mr. Used Car Lot Auto Salesman.
Slick back hair, a sharkskin suit, alligator boots. You cultivate a look that oozes, trust me.
I think that I can trust you.
You stand behind every car you sell. Because if you stood in front and the brakes failed, you'd be crushed.
You better watch out now.
Oil leak? What oil leak? That puddle under the car is just sweat from all that horsepower.
Let the horses out now.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, Mr. Peddler of the Sheet Metal. Because when life hands you lemons, you sell them.
Mr. Used Car Lot Auto Salesman.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Will Collins, Colorado.
They're so good, but there's a bunch of great, like, there's two, like, training montage songs there that really get you pumped up. One's, what's his name, Vince DiCola, I think, composed one of them.
Huh.
I have that on vinyl too, and I jam that when I'm cleaning the house because it gets me pumped.
That's not quite as like shameful.
How about this? My first two cassettes I ever bought were the Rocky IV soundtrack and Weird Al Yankovic, even worse.
My first two cassettes were Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby, and MC Hammer, You Can't Touch This.
I don't know if I ever had any like what maybe some people would consider like embarrassing or like a guilty pleasure.
And I mean, this is an interesting conversation to have too. I mean, you know, as I've grown into a beautiful, you know, nubile, athletic man of 37, I don't believe in the idea of guilty pleasure.
I don't anymore. No.
It's over. I like what I like, baby.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't give a fuck if it's not cool or too wimpy or whatever. You can't hurt me.
Look, guilty pleasure.
Hurt me.
Guilty pleasure, the definition would be you would be embarrassed if your friends found out that you liked it.
But I don't have
and
one.
And I just opened up Michael Bolton's vinyl.
And do we need do we need to do another 45 minutes on Photograph by Nickelback?
Dude, when our listeners Zach and Namarta both sent me the same Michael Bolton cassette.
Yeah.
One's for HQ Forerunner and one's for the HQ One.
Nice.
I listened to that whole cassette while running a few errands with the windows down.
Yeah, as it should absolutely. Be.
If I got to a stoplight and Bolt is, you know, doing that whole thing. I don't give a fuck if you laugh at me.
It reminds me of when we were making the Blue Cut Robbery record in 2013, I think.
Gosh.
And Tony Lucido, our great friend, who maybe we've mentioned on the podcast before, he's just one of the best bass players in town. He has a big personality. He's an interesting guy.
He's played with everybody.
And he's played on so much great stuff. And you know, when you work with him, you can see why. He makes it real clear all the time. You know, some people get to a certain level and you're like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
But Tony's not one of those guys.
Yeah.
But I do remember at that time, he was wearing a basketball jersey to the sessions, which don't look, you know, this is Nashville. People have a Florentine mustache. People have a monocle. People wear a hat from Tombstone. People wear, you know, people show up like show
the,
ready.
Like the Tombstone hat in your Instagram videos.
Yeah.
Which I live in Nashville.
We wanted to know.
I'm getting there.
Ethan and I wanted to know.
All right. Well, hold on. Okay. Well, should we do that now or should we save it?
A tangent of a tangent.
Okay.
Here's my question. Did it come with the lap steel? Because I saw.
It's called a Panama hat, by the way, you motherfucker.
Excuse me, Jimmy Buffett. We were in here doing a session for our friend Anna, and somebody was recording an overdub of whatever, and I was...
You guys were talking about me, weren't you?
No, I was sitting up front and scrolling through Instagram, and I saw that you posted a video of that Bitchin' Lap Steel you got, and it sounded awesome. Like, I was, like, really enjoying it, and then just towards the end of the video, your head kind of goes down, and I was like, is he wearing, like, a wide-brim hat?
It's like a Richie Sambora hat.
It totally is, and my first thought was, did that come with a lap steel? Because I've never seen that hat
or
in your house, on your head, or anything.
I like the mental image that these lap steels came in the mail and you're like, oh, this is amazing. You pulled them out of the box and you're like, shoot, I need a hat.
I mean, I immediately went to Urban Outfitters and got a cool hat.
Right.
No, the hat didn't. Okay. So the hat didn't come with the lap steels. It just came when I moved to Nashville. It just came with, like, you know, when I got my new, like, driver's license, they gave you, like, a cool hat.
Okay.
Because it's Nashville.
The Nashville
so,
hat.
Yeah. So, you know, yes, I looked cool in that hat. Yes, I did put the hat on to look cool. We live in Nashville.
We're not making fun of you. It's just we've never seen that hat before.
Well, I have lots of pieces of clothing that you guys have never seen before, okay?
I just...
Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine that. I can definitely imagine that, but that just seems like such a cool hat and looked great on you.
Well, that was like my touring hat. I often wore that hat on stage.
Which I bet that hat's been lonely for the last 14 months.
It has been, as have I. But here's the deal. Tony Lucido, not concerned about these matters.
Hang on, right. One more thing. When you pull that hat out for the first time in a long time.
Did a rabbit come out?
No,
yes.
No, that'd be amazing. Did you look at the hat and say, can I wear you?
There.
Oh boy. Okay. There we go.
I'm cross tangenting, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, we live in a very delicate age where if I didn't get permission from that hat, I might be canceled now. So yeah. I'm actually glad you brought that up. And yes, I did do that because guess what? I'm a fucking gentleman.
That's right.
I grew up on the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Yeah.
I grew up on that.
Yeah.
That's what's in my head. Okay.
Wait, so, but you were talking, sorry, finish the Tony.
We're still talking about Tony.
I'm telling you, today I can't win. I've been trying to tell these guys stories since we got here, and they find a little pivot point and interrupt and move on.
Now you know how I feel as your co-host.
Speaking of pivot points.
Uh-huh. Tangency. Ethan.
Yes. Let's talk about me.
I want to get this thing out about Tony.
Yeah.
Because Tony was wearing, by Nashville standards, an uncool outfit. And Tony just really believes it. He loves basketball.
Yeah.
And I think he was tapping into some early 90s Jeff Emmett Pearl Jam shit.
For sure.
But I do remember him very seriously, not even trying to be funny. He was like, and you guys would have to know Tony. I'm not talking to you guys, but I'm talking to our audience.
Right.
He looked at me and he was like, I think this is going to be my new look in Nashville. And he was like, I think I'm going to wear this every day to everything I do forever.
Yeah.
This is going to be like Tony's
look. He'd still get hired all the time.
Well,
no one's hiring Tony for what his blouses or his top is.
But Tony gets hired because, and I want to hear your opinion about this. Tony gets hired because when the tape's rolling, he delivers. But Tony also, and this speaks to a lot of success in town, Tony brings a lot of humor and how would you even describe it? His energy in a room is infectious and fun.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So while he's laying down some tasty James Jamerson licks, he's also providing a lot of like comic relief.
And, yep.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I got to imagine if you're thinking of people to hire, that's something that might come into play.
Absolutely.
With someone like Tony.
He's also pretty daring too when he's on sessions to like maybe throw out a joke that no one else would be comfortable throwing out.
Yeah.
He's got great stories about that.
You've heard the John Oates one, right?
Oh yeah. When he played Maneater.
Yeah. Like when he stopped everyone from playing and said, hey, John, I got this great bass line. I think we'll work on this. And starts playing the bass line to Maneater.
Yeah. The story I've heard him tell is...
Like, you could have gotten fired over that. Yeah.
The story I've heard him tell is he was doing bass for a Keith Urban record. And so it was just him and Keith and the producer. They were in the control room, because a lot of times for that instrument, you can just set amps up elsewhere. In fact, a lot of our listeners will be familiar with watching Metallica track, where they're in the control room together.
Right.
And Tony, I think, had never met Keith before, but I think he kind of knew the producer. And so right before they were playing the first song, Tony did this thing where he kind of made a little fuss and stopped everything. He's like, guys, wait a minute, guys, before we even play the first note. I said, he looked at Keith Urban and goes, you ready to have your fucking mind blown?
Which is so Tony.
Yeah.
And Keith Urban has a reputation as a very cool dude, but Keith Urban doesn't know Tony. So Keith Urban's looking at the producer like,
What's this guy's problem, man?
Exactly. There he is. And the producer was like, it's just Tony. So they roll the first song, super easy intro. Tony hit a clam in the first two bars.
Yeah, I have like a million stories of that dude. The two that I'll share. One time he was playing with Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, yeah.
When the Backstreet Boys were at the height of their, you know, fandom. And they had just broken up.
The zenith.
And he told the band leader, before Nick Carter got there to pretend like he was deaf.
Deaf in one ear or something.
Yeah. And he played the whole rehearsal making Nick think that he was hard of hearing.
And he was playing wrong notes
yeah.
at the rehearsal yes. on purpose.
No yes. way. I've never heard that story.
So, like, so Nick would come up and be like, no, it's in G. And Tony would be like,
oh, okay.
Okay. And he would play like a half step off.
My God.
Yeah.
And here's the funny thing about Tony. He's so convincing with stuff like this. Even if he was deaf, he knows where a G is still, right. you know, like,
how does that story end? Cause so here's the other deal.
It went way too long.
Cause he did it like a whole day.
Yeah.
And most guys get fired.
Well, so that goes to the second point I was going to say, but he went up to him after rehearsal and was like, hey man, I'm not hard of hearing. I was just messing with you. And Nick thought it was the best thing ever.
Yeah,
they went gambling all night in Vegas and became best friends.
Right.
So here's the thing.
I could have gone a whole different way though.
I, you know, in my role as the producer, really trying to befriend the artists, get to know them, earn their trust, spend countless hours going back and forth, making sure they feel like this guy's in my corner. I know I can trust this guy, right? And then day one rolls around of tracking, Tony shows up. Every time, this is how it goes down. He walks in the room, insults the artist in the first 10 minutes. And by the end of the day, the artist is texting Tony like, hey, do you want to go out after this?
Yeah.
Let's go hang.
Yeah, he's good about
that. All of a sudden, I'm like chopped liver. I'm like, wait, but I've invested, you know, all this time in you. It's like, no, you're the producer. I'm going to go hang out with the bass player.
You should try making fun of them more.
Yeah, seriously. No, that has not gone well in the past.
Tony,
he would say something that if I said it, the artist would cry.
Tony has a gift.
Yeah, he does.
Tony can insult somebody and you're like, what the hell is this? I love him.
last thing though, because he'd be embarrassed that we were talking about him.
He kind of would. I'm going to tell him we did it.
We should all text him at the same time. Listen to this episode.
He came over to my studio one time, my old studio. And he rented a room here for almost a decade.
So for people who may not know what that means, so what's actually your vinyl room now?
Yep.
A couple of people have done this. Our friend Chris did it too.
But yeah.
So Tony does a lot of remote sessions. So he'll have a little room at Paul's studio where I guess he pays rent, but he has all his gear there and he'll come in and just work from your studio.
Yep.
Which I got to imagine is fun for everybody.
Oh yeah, it was awesome.
You get to go in and hear what he's working on. He gets to come see what you're doing. You get to have lunch together.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what you meant by that.
Yeah, it was a little community.
He wasn't like living here.
Right. No.
He had only a top bunk in there.
No, yeah. When I say rented a room, he was not sleeping and showering here. But he comes in one day and he's like, I finally did it. I got a tattoo. And he had several tattoos, but I was like, oh, really? Well, let's see it. He immediately unbuckles his pants, drops his pants. Do you know what this tattoo is?
No.
It's on his thigh, upper thigh on the side, like right by his butt.
Hot.
He pulls down his pants. I'm with a female artist too. And he's like, check it out.
You read Whitney Houston.
And it's a square. Inside the square is neatly written three things with squares by them. The top two have checks in the square. So it's like a list, right?
Yes, no, maybe.
Do you know about this?
No.
The top says birth and it's got a check.
Oh God.
In red. The second says rock and roll and it's got a check. And the third says death. And he carries around a red Sharpie so that when he dies, whoever's at the scene can check off.
Oh my God. Goodness.
That is so him.
That is Tony.
Unbelievable.
Birth, rock and roll, death.
My goodness.
I want to tell one last Tony story and then we got to maybe pivot for Tony.
Or not.
Or we should have him on the show as a guest.
We should do that.
Because
we should do the next Tangent City with Tony.
Yeah, yeah, if Tony can be involved in Tangent City, that'd be pretty awesome.
You know what he's going to do when he hears this? He's going to text us all about all the little details we got wrong about all these stories.
Don't tell him that we're doing this.
Okay, so the story that I'm curious that you'll tell, and if you don't, we'll just take all this out.
Yeah.
Or maybe you can tell the story without names.
Okay.
But one of the stories that I absolutely love of yours, which isn't probably that fun of a story for you, is the one time you got fired.
Yeah.
Oh,
I knew that was going to come up.
I love this story.
Are you willing to tell it on the show?
Well, do you think the story will translate without me saying the artist?
Here's my question.
What do you think, Ethan?
Here's my question. Would said artist ever hear this?
And said artist still already doesn't like you. And we don't have to talk that much crap about the artist. The story doesn't make you sound bad. You didn't do anything wrong.
I know. I do want to respect the privacy of the artist and not have his name associated with this story.
It's Michael Bolton.
Maybe let me try it.
It's Michael Bolton.
Let's try it.
Well, I'll say this.
It's Bolton.
How can we say
on the chessboard, you folks at home, find Michael Bolton and just go.
It's not far.
Go two it's pawns to the left.
Like when you go on Spotify and it's like, you might also like this.
This is an artist who had several big songs that you might not even recognize that they wrote, but one big song everyone knows.
About five or six songs that everybody would know.
But there's one that really...
But there would be the one that we would play just 1 second of and you'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
But so let's not say who it is. Right. Let's be cool.
Big 80s.
It was an 80s.
Wedding singer song.
Real quick, may I interject?
Yeah.
It was Guar, wasn't it?
We have spent the last 4.5 years going, oh my, I'm Dave Mustaine. I'm a butthead.
That's different though, dude. He's with Metallica. This guy could not be further from Metallica.
Which is why I don't see the problem with saying his name. Or is it more like...
I don't want to pressure Paul to say his name if he doesn't want to.
Okay.
But, listen, the only reason I don't want to say his name...
It would be better if he said his name.
Are you still hoping for that gig to come up again? Is that what it is?
All right.
And plus,
because I love you guys.
Okay. We're going to do it? Okay.
Tony and I... we jeez. Well, let me say two things.
Okay.
Tony and I might be going out on the road this summer.
I know. I got that call.
Really?
You know why I didn't get the gig?
Why?
Because you took it.
Oh,
wait.
Did you not know that?
I didn't know that at all, guys. I got that call.
But it's for keyboards.
It was for keys, and
I thought it was auxiliary.
Yeah.
So
I got the call to sell merch on the tour.
So I got a call to play.
Dude, if we play the Ramen, I will totally have you tech for me.
So I get the. So this ties into Tony, and then
fuck
we need
you.
To. This is so funny. You don't know this, Paul.
I don't know.
So
this.
Tony Lucido called me and said, "Hey, can you play keyboards?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Kinda, not great. Depends on what it is, but yeah. What is it?" And he's like, "Well, Ann Wilson from Heart.
We're
putting a band together. It's Book of Ack." And he was like, "It got offered to Paul, but we don't know if he's going to do it." If Paul can't do it or doesn't want to do it, do you want to play with Ann Wilson? To which I said, you're goddamn right. I want to play with Ann Wilson.
Sure.
And he was like, cool. We're just waiting to hear back from Paul.
Oh, man.
And then maybe like 3 hours later, he's like, hey, Paul's going to do it.
Well, but here's the deal. My text to Tom was, I'm only committing to the stuff this summer. If they do Heart after that or any other Ann Wilson stuff, I'm probably out because I have to, you know, pay for this place.
That actually works. You get in there and you kill it as you will. And then you talk me up like, no one can do what I do except my boy Clint.
Exactly.
All right. So.
Love that.
So let's get to the story.
All right. Sorry, so. Ethan.
If I get in there, you're going to be the merch guy for sure.
Yes.
All right. Are we doing this?
I'm ready.
Yeah. I think we have to now, actually.
Okay. So. The beloved Richard Marx.
There it is.
Wherever you go.
Whatever you do,
I'll be right here waiting for you.
Right.
Many other hits along the 80s, early 90s. Well,
there it is.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
He went into retirement, but then wrote a ton of singles for NSYNC and
became a big songwriter.
All these big, you know, early 2000s artists. Decides in, I can't remember what year it was, probably 03 or 04, he wants to go one more round as a solo artist. So he makes a record. It's coming out. He puts a band together. Me and Tony are in it.
Was it good, by the way?
The new music?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Cool. And he wrote it and it was like a real, he really wanted to do like another shot at the cycle of maybe have a hit, maybe do a big tour.
Absolutely.
Cool.
The songs were great. The band was me and Tony, and we were supposed to be the Young Rockers. Okay. Because at the time, I'm in my early 20s.
Did you have a Panama hat?
No Panama hat.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Well, now we're starting to see.
Yeah, this story could have ended way differently.
Yeah. And then the rest of the band was, I'm not going to say this, they were all members of another touring artist's band. And so we started. Tony had one of those things. In our very first rehearsal, Richard stopped the band. He's like, hey, Tony, what would it sound like if you just played eighth notes on the chorus? And Tony goes, it'd sound like this. Ba, 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 ba.
And
that did not go over too well. words were spoken. And so I learned real quick, like, this guy has a pretty dry sense of humor. That's fine, you know. So we go out and we're playing, you know, like a month-long promo stuff, doing radio festivals and stuff. Like, Maroon 5 was huge at the time, like, coming on the scene, their first record.
Mm-hmm. Songs About Jane.
And so we played this radio festival. It was like Hulk Hogan's daughter had released a record. So the Hulk was at the radio festival.
Hell yeah, it was, brother. Yeah.
It was him, her, Maroon 5, whatever was popular.
I'll be right
at
there
the
waiting
time.
For you, brother.
It's Brooke Hogan, by the way.
Brooke Hogan, that's right. What did I say? Just his daughter.
His daughter.
Yeah. Just daughter of.
And she was like, don't call me daughter.
Did not meant to be.
So what was funny, the hallway of this one particular radio festival with Hulk Hogan and everybody else.
The Hulkway.
It was like packed. Everybody's smoozing and all of us are just in the dressing room like, can we please just play this and get out of here? And Richard comes in and shuts the door behind him. And he looks at all of us and he goes, I remember what I loved about touring right now. And we go, what's that? And he goes, not one thing.
Oh,
and
wow.
I knew right then, I was like, wow, this has an expiration date. But anyway, we kept playing and we went up to this.
How far into it did he say that? Was that like day one?
That was like week one.
Okay.
Day three. We go up to this casino in Canada called Casino Rama. Have you ever played it?
Probably.
Casino Rama. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
And we played the show. It went great. And afterwards, I'm eating dinner and it's just the band guys. So me and Tony and the other guys. They started talking about the music and I was totally being baited. I didn't realize it at the time. But they said, how do you feel about playing that 80s stuff? I was like, man, some of the sounds on the guitar are super cheesy, but
were
I like
you like
the songs.
Recreating the album sounds?
Oh, yeah, like chorusy.
You were like being faithful to the records.
Right.
So, yeah, like, very chorusy.
I was like,
because you're a pro.
Because you're a pro. That's right.
I was like, it's not my vibe. I like the new stuff, but the older stuff sounds dated and cheesy to me. It was the exact words out of my mouth.
But so, I got to imagine you weren't being. Like, put me in that scenario with my spicy flavor.
Right.
And I'm trying to get maybe garner a few more laughs.
Yeah.
I could see me maybe taking that moment to maybe be a little spicier.
Right.
I got to imagine that you said it very sweetly.
I said exactly what I just said.
It's not my favorite. They're a little cheesy. I love the new stuff, but it's fine.
Right.
Which you would think an artist like Richard Marx would really like the fact that he loved the new stuff.
Right.
Because there's a lot of artists that are like from the 80s that are like, yeah, that's what I'm known for. That's my thing, but I'm really excited about my new record.
Well, but here's where I got to give Richard the benefit of the doubt. I don't know what was told to him. The band leader went back and said, hey, this guy's talking crap about you.
Oh,
here's what he said.
Man.
And I don't know what he conveyed that I said. All I know is I was in my hotel room the next morning. I got a call from management saying, you're flying home today. You're out.
You got fired on the road.
On the road.
So they had to call someone else to come in like the night before.
No, it was the last show of that run. But.
Okay.
So then there was going to be a little break.
Okay, hang on. So everyone was flying home that day.
But you're flying home for good.
Yeah, look, yeah. You're not
details.
You don't have a return ticket.
You know what I think? You know what I think the band leader told Richard? Yeah, we were at dinner, and the guitar player said he really wanted to touch you.
There. Yeah.
Richard's like, get this guy. Yeah. So honestly, so it must have gotten back to him in a not flattering way.
Right.
And Richard goes, he's out.
He's out. Deal with it. Management calls me. So I have Richard's cell phone. So I call him. No answer.
Oh.
So the message I left him was, hey, I don't know what you heard. I was at dinner with the guys last night. This is exactly what I said. I said, I think your songs from the 80s, the sounds for the guitar are cheesy.
You said it again to him.
Yeah.
You doubled down.
And I was like, that's how I feel, but that doesn't reflect how I'm going to play for you as a person. And I would love to clear the air. I don't want you to give me my gig back. I just want to be able to talk to you so we can close this out and be cool about it.
So no bad blood.
Yeah. No answer. So what comes about is those guys were trying to get their buddy that plays guitar in the band.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
Oh, so they were baiting
them. I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
Well, that's fucked up. Totally. So, okay. Well, here's the deal.
Where were you, Tony?
Well, so here's the deal.
So Tony got let go like 2 weeks later.
Because he was didn't your...
He didn't get fired.
But he got let go.
They were like, hey, we're moving on a different direction. And then...
But that's the nice way to say it.
Here's what definitely happened. What got relayed to Richard was not... Had a little more teeth in it than what right. you actually
he
said.
He thinks your music sucks.
Exactly. It was probably something like that.
Joke's on them, because guess what?
They play for Richard Marx.
No. Because guess what?
Can we call him Dick Marx, by the way?
Yeah. Guess what? Richard had other plans and replaced both me and Tony with two different people that weren't the guys that band wanted.
Oh.
Guess who replaced me?
Who? Me?
Matt Scannell from Vertical Horizon. Guess who replaced the bass player? Vertical Horizon's bass player.
I was going to say the other guy from Vertical Horizon.
Yeah. What?
They were best friends, are still, but probably good friends, but they were really good friends at the time. And Richard was like, dude, do you want to come out and play guitar for me? Matt Scannell was like, yeah.
I just can't take having all these strangers here who hate my 80s guitar sounds.
Were Vertical Horizon, they already
had
their peak?
They had already,
Okay.
That peak was probably 99.
Yeah.
Running on an Ice album after that.
And this was like early 2000s, right?
Yeah, probably 03, 04. Maybe even after that.
The everything you want and the you're a God thing had already happened.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know I love you, but I think you're fine to talk about this. It's been almost about 20 years. It's okay. You're in a safe place. Your studio.
Well, okay, so if we're going there, 10 years after that, I'm working with a female artist who had written some songs with one Richard Marx. Sends him an email. Hey, I didn't put this together. I'm working with Paul. He used to play for you.
And
I'm in his studio. Yeah. How awesome is that?
And what'd he say?
He said, she said, so we have mutual friends. His reply, so glad you're working with Paul. I know he'll do a great job, but let's get one thing straight. We're not mutual friends.
Ooh. Ooh. So he hung on to it.
Oh, yeah.
He was right there waiting.
So what you...
Yes!
Hey, Richard, if you find this... I still want to close the chapter and tell you what happened at Casino Rama in Ontario, Canada. So call me, buddy.
One second.
Be a buddy and call me.
Be a buddy.
Be a buddy.
Richard, be a buddy and call Paul. If he finds this, we are tagging him in this episode.
It does make me think, like, when you got that call, I've never been quite in that position, but I've been in something similar. And it is weird. It's like, man, that's not even what happened. And right. I like that you wanted to reach out and be like, dude, let's just talk about it. I think if he had picked up the phone, you probably would have kept doing the gig. But I don't know. It's such a weird reason to get let go. Like, if you really didn't do a good job,
right.
Or if you really were kind of like talking out of turn.
Well, I think it was more political, you know?
Right.
And bottom line, if you don't have a good name in this business, in life in general, then what do you really have? You know, so.
You've got a Michael Bolton LP.
Yeah.
That's right. You do.
Anyway, enough about one Mr. Sir Marx.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. Yeah. It's a fascinating little window into sort of
the interesting
dynamics of what it's like to live in this town and try to do this job.
Well, yeah. And also, you know, for our listeners, a fascinating look at a pre-Smokestack Paul.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, you have mentioned on the show before that you were a touring musician and stuff like that and played for a lot of artists. But most of our listeners know you as Paul from HQ3.
Right. Totally.
So,
yeah, I had a previous life.
Yeah, you were like a big road guy.
Yeah.
For 10, 12 years.
That's sort of how I was aware of you in my early touring, because I toured with an old friend of yours named Trip Etheridge, who was a drummer. Yeah,
yeah. He was in my high school band.
So we would be doing, me and Trip would be, and I knew of your work and stuff, but I was living in Birmingham, and we'd be doing these tours, and we'd be in our hotel in a van tour, flipping through the fucking channels and see you on the fucking TV.
Damn, dude.
Because you guys have both played The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, The Tonight Show. Oh, which time? The first time or the third time? And so I remember flipping through the TV. I remember one night in particular, it was like you on the one late night thing. And I think I was even like, I can't even watch it because I'm not there. And I remember we flipped it to the other one, and our friend Court Clement was playing with like Mark Broussard on the other fucking Tonight Show. I was like, God damn it, this is a cursed evening.
Then you flip the other channel and you're like, I don't know who that drummer is on the Tonight Show, but I might do a podcast with him one day.
I don't know who this drummer is on the Playboy channel, but I like him.
And then you flipped to the other channel and it was the Ryman and it was just me and you
there
on stage.
There we go, finally. Yeah. It's the only thing I have. It's the only arrow in my quiver.
Look, here's what people at home need to understand. This is the way I like to explain it, okay? Because I have a massive amount of gratitude for where I am. But when...
Wherever you go, whatever you do,
gosh, dude. You know that me and Clint will be right there waiting for you.
Look, here's the deal. When I was 15 and found the guitar, the penultimate of my hopes and dreams were, man, if I could learn how to play this, right?
Of course.
And then you learn how to play it, and it's like it modifies, and it's like, man, be cool to play with someone else.
Totally,
you know. And then you find those people, and it's like, wow, we sound good. It'd be good to play in front of some people. And then you play in front of some people and that's not enough. It's like, you know what'd be cool is if we got paid to do this. And then you get paid to play in front of people. And then it just keeps progressing to the point where
it'd be really cool to be able to touch somebody there.
It progresses to the point where you're at the level that we're all at. And sometimes when you're too deep in the weeds, it's hard to remember like we were saying tonight when we first walked in, I don't have to put on a Home Depot apron and try to sell nuts and bolts to people. There's nothing wrong with that. But I need to recognize the immense amount of blessing that I have in my life to be able to do what I love for a living. And when you get caught in little situations like what I just described with Richard, it's easy to lose sight of the fact that like, man, I get to play music for a living. I've already won the lottery, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I think what's interesting too about that is I think we've done this all three together actually, where you just never know what someone's dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. So there have been times where I've like shot you a text or you guys have shot me texts that said something invariably like, hey man, I'm just thinking about you and I think what you do is really great and I'm really grateful I get to work with you or make music with you.
I've never texted you that, by the way.
But, you know, or I've texted you before where I was like, maybe I was listening to Let It Burn or something. Yeah. And I was like, man, I just want you to know, like, I just really respect the work you do. Like, sure. I just think you're a great musician. I'm just really, those little moments occur to me and I'm on my own trip in my own cloud. And then someone will write back and be like, man, you have no idea how much I needed to hear that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh yeah. For
Ethan
sure.
did that to me last week.
I did.
It made my week.
Yeah, it's interesting how in this industry, even when you're doing well, we're just constant. It's the meritocracy of it. Like, I remember I texted my friend Dwight Baker, who produces a lot of Bob's old stuff, and he was just checking in on me, and I was like, oh, he was like, what's going on with you? And I was like, oh, I re-signed my publishing deal, which has been a really kind of cool development over the last few weeks.
That's great. It's awesome.
And I was like, you know, I think I'm just trying to figure out what the fuck's next. And he was like, that's what we do. He was like, well, that's it. Yeah. That's what we do.
That's what we always
do. We're always just trying to figure out what's next.
Absolutely.
And that's really fun. And it beats the Home Depot, the orange apron.
Right.
That I always see hovering above me somewhere. Just the orange apron. And nothing wrong with it. Again.
No, my dad literally works at Home Depot. It's okay.
But that takes a toll.
I was having a conversation with someone the other day and we were talking about how, for those of you at home that are listening, the pandemic's been pretty rough on a lot of musicians, as you could imagine.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of people have gotten out of music.
Yeah.
And even over that, before that, the last 5 or 6 years have been just, it's tough in Nashville, if you're not already established the way that we three are, to really keep the flame burning, you know? And a lot of my friends have moved into other jobs, and a lot of those friends have picked up the real estate license because real estate's so hot here in Nashville.
Crazy. Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I don't know why. Maybe it's because it, you know, you don't have to put in a whole lot of hours to get a real estate license. I don't know. And my buddy was like, no, dude, it's because when you're a musician, you're used to feast or famine. You work and work and work, and then you get that payoff of one lump sum because you got a gig or made a record and, you know, or got a publishing advance or whatever. Mm-hmm. that translates into the real estate market because you work and work and work and work, and then you finally get a sale and you get that commission.
It's another meritocracy.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not going to make any money if you're not out there hustling and making sales. And
right. Yeah, exactly. This is, besides the almost 2 years I moved back to California for fish tacos.
Bay Area? SoCal?
No, it was fucking the OC, man. Yeah, like
it's a different
taco. That's right.
I've been here, you know, I moved here 20 years ago this year.
Wow.
For the first time. And you know, like we were talking about earlier, like, I mean, this is like in our blood, music's in our blood. Like it's feast or famine, but we don't give a fuck. We're going to keep pushing forward. I'm going to go tech for that band so that I could eventually work my way back to play for this person or get a call from Paul to come in and do a session. Like,
right.
If I come and do a session at Smokestack for 2 or 3 days, the amount of joy I get out of that just completely overshadows 7 weeks of touring and making money that whole time. And that's great. And the money's good and people are great. But, you know, as musicians and artists, like, I mean, this is where we thrive.
Right.
I can't imagine. Like, I mean, I've done the jobs that, you know, other people do honorable, but
you do a lot of hustling to make things work. I've always admired that about you.
Absolutely. I mean, that's all I know. Like, I mean, I've done that since I even probably before I started touring, but I've been touring since I was 18 years old. That's just what I do. I don't really know another way. Like, I just,
you know, what's interesting to me about just thinking about what you're saying, and I'm not even trying to engineer Metallica into this.
Sure. I forgot this is a Metallica podcast.
Well, Tangent Cities are Tangent.
I'm actually holding up a whiteboard that says Engineer Metallica back.
You're producing the episode.
You're producing it, yeah.
How much of, and I think this is a legitimate thing to consider, how much of the Inner Sandman video, or just MTV culture, but obviously Metallica starting in 89 was a big part of MTV culture. How much of us watching those knuckleheads and other knuckleheads of their kind has just completely shaped
100%, dude.
Like, what, obviously what we do, but this thing we're talking about of like when it's dry, when it, like this last 18 months has been very strange, obviously.
Sure, of course.
Phone not ringing or even just, even though I think the three of us have been able to like put things together, but also like the implications of like, what are we doing? Is this sustainable? Right. What does this even mean for later?
Mm-hmm.
How much of just seeing those guys with a strobe light singing, you know, off to Never Never Land.
Right. Semi truck and the old man.
Has just completely wired me to where I'm like, this is all I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think about this often.
It's like when you die.
It's like when you're hustling in Nashville.
It's kind of like when you got no other options because you gave your life to this poetic life of the vagabond and you somehow go on.
It's like when you get fired because the music was cheesy, but then you apologize. It's like wherever you go.
Well, wherever you go and sort of like whatever you do and you make the phone call, but he doesn't pick up. And it's like, I'll be right there waiting for you when we fly home from Ontario.
Even though you don't like to put a chorus pedal on your guitar.
It's like when the guitar sounds like a synthesizer and it's dated and you want to modernize it, but you can't. You get dinner and the band leader says, what do you think? And you go on, you know how you go on. And then he stabs you in the back with a shiv he made in prison somewhere. And you get the call.
A Richard Marx shiv.
It's like a shiv. It's like wherever you go, whatever you do, I'll be here ready to stab you in the back. And then you go on.
And live.
Dude, you know what was happening? You know what was happening on that gig?
Oh, what?
I was washing their back so they won't stab mine.
Sweet Amber, baby. How about James? How about James being like, is that really how it works?
Yeah.
And his manager's like, yes, James.
This is what we've been doing forever.
Hi. But you know what? This speaks to the sort of the credibility of their management. Were they protected from that information that long?
Maybe.
It's either that, or I think maybe at that point, maybe it was just becoming clear to James, like, yeah, you kind of play the game. You know how to play the game over the years, but maybe it just made even more sense to him at that point. Like, we've been doing that shit for a long time. Is this really what it is?
No. You know what I think maybe some of the subtext of that conversation was? Was maybe Metallica had lost a little bit of power in terms of, I think maybe what James might have been saying was, do we have to do that?
Right.
We meaning Metallica.
Because during the Black Album, we definitely didn't.
Right.
I think they had it. I mean, and starting from obviously the Black Album through 2000, they could probably make any kind of deals they wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they made deals.
Yeah.
They made deals with MTV to do the Motherlode tour. that was a lucrative deal for
everybody.
That's
on their terms.
On their terms.
Oh, for sure.
So that might have been the first time in a hot minute.
Yeah.
Where they were having to do something they didn't want to do and play some game.
Right, man.
And maybe that was kind of foreign for him for a minute.
You know what's super exciting? I have two interns at the studio that have been here for about maybe 2 years now. Today it came out, they have not seen Some Kind of Monster.
What?
Oh.
I showed them the trailer.
Who are we talking about?
Brendan and Samuel.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Samurai.
Yeah, Samurai.
Yeah.
And The Dawn. And so I showed Samurai wasn't here. He has COVID, so he's out for a bit.
So that makes Zach and Samurai.
Yeah.
What about, has everyone had COVID?
The Dawn, he got COVID when Goodbye June was here. I'm the only one that hasn't.
Amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, I showed The Dawn the trailer today.
And?
Jaw on the floor. He was like, wow.
Wait till he sees it. Oh my gosh. Dude. Can I be here for?
But you know,
the trailer. Have you seen the trailer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Are you going to watch it here?
You want to come over?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We should all.
We're going to do it this week.
Do I want to come over to watch Some Kind of Monster with two
people?
You're
going to do it this week? For real?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Thursday?
We'll get the info.
Cool. I'll be in Cleveland.
I'll be here.
Friday?
I get back. I fly home that day.
I can't deal with you, dude.
Well, he's probably doing it at night. At night.
I was going to do it during the day.
Tonight.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Oh.
Why not?
Speaking of during the day, okay, here's a pivot point.
Okay.
And we don't have to spend too long on this, because here's something I do want to talk about. I want to talk about your instrumental album.
Okay. In process, yes.
And particularly why you didn't have me write lyrics for it. So prepare for that over there.
Why
just kidding.
Why did Clint not write lyrics for my instrumental
JK,
album?
JK. Fun day with me and you today, going back and forth, because you were mixing a new Lunar Satan song.
Yeah,
today.
Dude.
Which, when I pulled into the Smokestack parking lot.
I was blasting it.
I was first here, by the way.
No way.
Oh, yeah. And
well, it fucking rips.
Here's what's funny.
It sounds good.
It fucking rips.
Dude. I got a little worn out on revision 6, and then we went to 7.
I know. I feel bad about that.
Revision 6.
Well, here's the deal. When you're doing mixed revisions remotely, it's like...
It's tough.
It's different than if you're in a room. If you're in a room with somebody, you can just catch shit like in real time and be like, grab that. Paul's doing revisions, you know, mix, bouncing them and sending to me. I'm in my world doing all my shit today and like... Trying to just think of notes. And I mean, I get to the point where I'm like, after like the third mix, they all sounded good.
Right.
So I'm like,
it's just little stuff.
Yeah.
Like he was like, can you make the cuckoo? Can you bring that down the mix? And I brought it down. He's like, that's too far. Right. Bring it up. You know,
which in person that happens in real time and it's really fast.
And it's like 1 minute.
Yes.
I know. I felt bad.
That's not your fault though, dude. It's all good.
But we got it. That's the nice thing about when it's done though. It's like we did 7 and you get it to where it needs to be. Where it's like it's magic. Mm-hmm. Like the last time you sent it, well, maybe a few before that, minus a few small things, but the last time you sent it, I didn't hear mixes.
Yeah.
I heard the song.
Yeah.
That's where you want to get to.
And that's it. That's the magic.
Clint pulled up in the parking lot next to me. I had my window down already. I had some music playing. I turned it down. He's like, check this out. And it was like the last, like maybe 2 minutes of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, even from a distance, even that, sounded fucking awesome.
I'll say this.
It rips hard, dude.
To the fans out there, it's like Lunar Satan made their record, went away, and then found Tool.
It's different.
And then they were like, different. Oh, Tool's cool. We should put some of that in our vibe.
That flavor.
Well, in actuality, it was All Them Witches and Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
I'm dude, so glad.
You know what that riff reminds me of in the song?
What?
Stone Roses.
I'm not familiar with them.
Oasis?
Oh, this is a band called the Stone Roses.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was like the same time as Oasis.
Oh, okay.
It's like the British.
I know Oasis.
Evanescence.
I'm your Wonderwall.
Big Stone Roses.
You know another band I'm listening to that is similar to that is Monster Magnet.
Remember Monster them? Magnet, not man. Familiar. I have not heard about them in a while.
So they had that one big song, and I have a greatest hits of theirs. I think it's called Power Trip. And I've just been listening to all their deep cuts to me, but I guess they were singles. It's the greatest hits.
Right.
Wow.
But they didn't have any hits.
You mean like this?
Exactly. The Bolt Man. Like the Bolt. Monster Magnet Gold.
I mean.
I said I loved you, but I lied.
But I lied.
Really? Okay. Let's get into this. I mean, I'm not saying Michael Bolton's infallible, but is he lying in love? Is he lying for love? I can't believe it.
I don't know.
I don't think he'd say he loved them if he didn't really mean it. Do you?
I'm more interested in can I touch you there?
But is he saying
I figure out what that's all about?
Is he saying I loved you, but I lied, meaning I said I loved you so I could have sex with you?
Oh, is this it?
This is Can I Touch You There.
What is that instrument it started with?
A didgeridoo?
No, a didgeridoo sounds like it's like a
rain like stick.
Didgeridoo is like wow, 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 wow.
I don't know what this is, but I'm in.
It sounds kind of like 90s Duran Duran.
Yeah.
He's so good, dude.
How many fans are turning off right now? How many fans are turning up right now?
Exactly.
That's the question.
Okay, come closer.
Come closer. My love is taking over.
He's got that Crypt Keeper finger. That bony finger with like cobwebs on it. I need a what? Oh, he wants to get to know him on a deep level. He wants to touch your heart. Yes, I'm not hearing the ellipsis. It should have just been called, dude. Can I touch you there? The dot, dot, dot there.
Yeah, yeah. That's like 90s clickbait.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that's what sucks you into the song. Like, oh, totally. I got to listen to this.
That's like the Loudwire of White Guy Soul.
This is White Guy Soul copying Marvin Gaye. What's going on?
That does sound like What's Going On.
What's going on? All right.
What's going on there?
All right. What was the other one? Oh, said gosh. I love you, but I lied.
Yeah, man. I need to hear the lyric because I'm not buying it. I'm not buying.
How about the instead of man. Listening, I just read you the lyric to
great.
This.
I would love to read these lyrics.
You are the candle, love's a flame.
Okay.
A fire that burns through wind and rain.
I like it.
Shine your light on this heart of mine till the end of time.
Yeah.
You came to me like dawn through the night, just shining like the sun.
I like that.
Out of my dreams and into my life, you are the one. You are the one.
I kind of like all of it.
Said I loved you, but I lied. And here's what you wanted to know.
Oh, he digs down deeper.
Because this is more than love.
There we go.
I feel inside.
I knew it. I knew he'd just dig in deeper.
Said I loved you, but I was wrong. Because love could never feel so strong.
Holy shit.
God.
Said I loved you, but I all right. lied.
Okay.
I knew it. I knew. Because here's the deal.
Wait.
Just look at... So... I just Googled the lyric, right?
Okay.
Underneath the lyric, if you scroll down, it's just got an autoplay of the video.
Just his hair blowing in the wind. Dude, he's by the sea.
Oh. He's like on a cliff by the ocean.
Of course he is. That's probably his backyard.
Here's the deal. I'm really glad we decided to read that because it's documented here a few minutes ago. I couldn't believe, because I think the title, the clickbait title is, I love you, but I lie, meaning I didn't love you when I said it because I was trying to fuck
it's
you.
It's clickbait.
But that sounds kind of like, I mean...
But what he's saying is,
do that? No.
But what he's saying is, I lied because what I feel for you can't even be defined by the word love.
Right.
So when I said love, I sort of inadvertently was wrong. Oh, not only was he wrong, he lied.
Right. And I call bullshit.
Because what he's describing really is just deeper love.
Yeah, for sure.
It's semantics.
Well, it's songwriting.
That's.
I don't feel like people actually exist on that level.
It's songwriting.
Said I loved you, but I lied.
It's pretty sick. Damn, lyric. Though. I'm gonna tell my wife that later. I'm gonna start with.
Wake her up. Hey, wake up, wake up. I loved you.
Wait,
but
so
I lied.
Did you say what your first CDs were? Because you were saying tapes.
No, he said his first. He said my Rocky Four.
My first tape. My first two tapes were Rocky Four soundtrack and Weird Al.
But what was your first CD?
Oh, I know what my first CD was.
I've mentioned this on the show.
I need to go back and do my tapes because mine, that was James Taylor, Michael Bolton. That was all CDs.
My first CD, it's not like something that is quote unquote a guilty pleasure.
Right.
The first CD I ever bought was
The Master Beatles,
of,
Abbey
no,
Road.
No, it was Master of Puppets. It really was.
For real?
Yeah, it was for real.
That's
the first CD.
Cool points
I ever owned.
Go to Ethan.
Sorry.
One, sorry. Clint, zero. Paul,
hey, listen,
two.
This is that's what you get for, you know, getting in on justice.
You just sounded like Mustaine. Getting in on justice.
Well, I wrote half that record.
The DeLorean.
They didn't give me any credit, and I need to get a DeLorean and go back.
All right, so
in time
were you saying
Doc
tapes
Brown.
Earlier, or were you talking
I was
to
saying
I'm
tapes.
Still trying to do the Back to the Future thing over here, but Paul interrupted me.
Make like a tree and get out of here. It's make like a tree and leave. You sound like a butthead when you say it like that.
You want a Pepsi, pal. You're going to pay for it.
You're the one who wanted me to get these.
These things.
Calvin Klein.
Calvin Klein.
That's your name, isn't it, Calvin Klein? It's written all over your underwear.
I hate manure. No, my first
imagine
CD.
Imagine that. Two McFlys with one gun. Something like that.
Not that one. His dad. You know, the guy who took his life and flushed it completely down the toilet.
Dude, y'all have unbelievable memories.
You're my density.
Here's the best that I can do.
We're going back in time.
That's the power of love. Keep the symbol splashy. Neighborhood of B.
Hold up. I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.
You may not like it, but your kids are going to love it.
Oh, dude.
All right.
Save the clock tower. I can't even finish these lines. Now they're really coming to
you
me.
You want a nerdy thing?
Yep.
Apparently, the Gibson that he's playing in that is a 355.
The like Chuck Berry Red.
Yeah, yeah. That didn't come out until supposedly like 2 years after that time in the movie.
Back to the Future is canceled.
You know where they rented that guitar from?
Norm's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Norm's Rare Guitars.
They did. I think that guitar is a 56 and the movie's supposed to be in 55.
That's Michael J. Fox not like buy that guitar?
Dude, for real.
Maybe he did.
I don't know. Just watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay? This is a blues riff.
Don't touch the mic. It's yeah, there you go.
It's your cousin, Marvin Berry.
Do you know that new sound you're looking for?
Well, listen to
this. How do you guys do this? I've watched those movies just as much as you.
I literally watched Back to the Future Part 1 and 2 a week ago.
I haven't seen it in years.
Really?
I think he took that guy's wallet.
Biff, get your meat hooks off of me.
You know hoverboards work on water.
Yeah, unless you have power.
Tell it to my sweaty knees. My ankles are herbulating.
He's a peeping Tom.
I can't participate at all.
Oh my god, dude. Okay.
Get the church giggles. I can't.
I wanted to say something else too. You know, Newstead had an interesting...
Yes, I saw that today.
Newstead had an interesting thing that's come out.
Tell me more.
A lot of people... Tell me more, money more. I'm going into Empire Records now.
Amazing.
Love that movie.
Rex Manning Day.
Not on Rex Manning Day.
Okay. So this was an interview he did... Remember when he did that Chop House gig that we covered?
Yeah.
So this is an interview he did for TV down in Florida. He's like totally, he's doing like local TV news in Florida. Somehow just came out, but it
does
is
he live down there?
Yeah, that's, they moved from Montana down there.
Where does he live?
Florida.
Florida man.
Yeah, Florida.
Gainesville.
Right, When a Man Loves a Woman in Gainesville.
Yeah, of course.
When a Man Loves a former bass player of a metal band in Gainesville.
Yeah, totally.
But he did come out and it was an interesting interview. He's talking about the Chop House, but he's talking about how he's physically sort of aged out of being able to even do the Metallica shit.
Right.
I have a thought on this.
Where he's saying, he's saying like, I couldn't even do it if I wanted to. And he's talking about the surgeries he's had on his shoulders.
Sure.
So he fucked up his right shoulder because he was the amp that he caught when he was doing the Supernova shit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then he says when his arm was like immobilized, he was doing too much with his left hand.
Yeah.
So when his right arm got healthy, he had to have surgery on his left hand. And then he talks about getting like addicted to the Vicodin.
Can happen.
Which I thought was pretty like, pretty interesting. And he actually even he talks about Heath Ledger. He was like, I was addicted to the same drugs. He's like, but I was able to get out of it, out of a different ending.
He was dressing like the Joker.
Some people just want to see the world burn. Sorry.
Dave Mustaine quoting movies will never get old.
Sorry.
Especially Back to the Future.
That's ridiculous. Okay.
I'm the godfather.
We're not in Kansas anymore.
I have your car towed all the way to your house. All you have me is light beer.
Just the most famous.
Your little dog, too. Take the cannolis. Leave the gun.
Run, Forrest. Run.
You can't sit here. Seat's taken.
Seat's taken.
He said my back would be straight as an arrow.
Luke, I am your father.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Oh, God. I'm going to pass out. Jesus.
Yo, Adrian, we did it.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay. Jesus.
Don't call me Junior.
Oh, dude. Oh, my gosh. Well, okay. I don't even know what we're talking about.
Can we? Okay.
We're talking about Evanescence still?
No.
Or Richard Marx.
What's another Tony Lucido story?
Yeah.
No, so Jason's saying he got addicted to the pills, but he was talking about, like, I physically couldn't even be in Voivod. And so he's like, the reason that in Chop House Band that I do Johnny Cash songs is because I could sit in a chair and play Johnny Cash.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I find a way to make it fucked up and heavy and weird, but.
Yeah.
So you said you had a theory about this.
I mean, here's the thing. He's been out of Metallica for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 20 years.
Yeah.
If he had stayed in Metallica, I mean, it's like an athlete training. Like if you're an amazing baseball player for 10 years straight, and then you take even 3 years off and don't even do anything baseball related, you're gonna have to retrain your entire body to condition yourself to do that again.
Right.
So to me, the article was a little clickbaity where it's like, I couldn't do Metallica anymore if I tried, or whatever it was. Yeah.
Said I loved you, but I tried.
Exactly. Can I do Metallica?
There.
I think it's a little clickbaity because it's like, well, you haven't been in the band and played that kind of music in that long. He did the Newstead thing, which was heavy. He did Voivod again, which is heavy, but not on the level that he was doing with Metallica.
He looks like he's in pretty good shape.
Oh, for sure. He totally does. And of course, we all love Newstead. He's, you know, I know he's, you know, mine and yours favorite bass player. But yeah, I mean.
Is he yours? I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I guess I thought you were like more of a Cliff guy.
I kind of teeter between Cliff and Jason. Yeah. But I mean, I just love the Newstead era.
What
so
about
much.
You, Paul? Where do you weigh in on that? Not that it has to be either or.
Right.
And we love Robert.
Of those two, I've always been Camp Newstead because of his dedication to the band and wearing the t-shirts and screaming louder than anyone else,
mm-hmm.
and being a fan that made it into the band.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at this point I would be Team Rob.
Hmm.
Mm.
Of all three, I think he came at a time that he fulfilled the role that they needed to keep the band alive.
Right.
And has been nothing but positive energy into the life of Metallica. I don't know that there's room for a third personality the size of James or Lars.
Sure.
And they've got Kirk to deal with. And then Rob's this guy that's like...
to deal with.
Yeah, for real. I mean, Kirk's a handful. Let's be honest.
He's a hammockful.
Yeah.
I do think the more I think about all this, it's interesting. Some things came up this week with this Newstead article. Someone was saying on the Discord, they were like, every time I see an interview with Jason, I like him less, which I thought was interesting.
Like him less?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't feel that way.
I don't either.
But I was just sort of thinking about the interview through that person's eyes.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah.
I think that maybe what they're hinting at is what I see 20 years later, which is Jason, we all love him because we're like, he's the fan that made it up on stage and he's mm-hmm. all Metallica. I think as time goes on, it's proving he was more of a bigger personality than maybe we thought when he was in the band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, to your point, I think that if he really put in the time, regardless of injuries or whatever, right. I think that he could play the stuff.
For sure. And I think also Jason is such a passionate musician and player and artist.
Yeah.
I think if hypothetically, let's say he was going to come back and do something with Metallica and he put in the time and trained, so to speak, you know, I mean, it'd be the same thing if, you know, like I played in Demon Hunter, a metal band, you know, I haven't been in that band since 2008. If they asked me to play a show, I couldn't just spend one night relearning the songs and jump on stage. I would be like, just like,
right. But if they gave you 2 weeks to prepare,
2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, or if I just knew in advance, it's like, okay, I need to condition not only my entire body, but just like my right hand, especially because right. I was doing as many downstrokes as I could, you know, and then obviously like fast picking.
But I think he also has injuries that we don't have.
Sure.
Right.
Multiple sure. surgeries.
Well, he's almost 60. I mean, he was older than the guys.
Yeah.
But again, you haven't done that gig in 20 years, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of high energy for 2.5 hours a night
right.
or whatever, you know? So, and now you're like playing acoustic guitar. Like, of course you're not going to be able to come close to that.
I think the more I learn about the whole deal, the more I can see that a lot of it had to do with just personality clash.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because he'd always had these other bands.
Right.
He's been doing Tribe House Band since like the early 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like his front porch hang with his buddies.
And he had like the, what were they called? Like the Papa Wheelies. He'd always had these little side projects. He had like a side project with the Sepultura guy.
Right.
But I think when Echo Brain happened, first of all, it was getting like attention from their management and it was looking like it might be like a real thing, not a front porch thing.
Right.
Right.
And then on top of that, I think you just got, they'd been with him for what, since 86. Late 86.
Yeah.
And I think there was like, there's just not a lot of room for personality at that level when you got a Hetfield Ulrich situation.
For sure.
Which is why I think Rob.
Which is why he crushes it. Yeah, he fits in.
Oh, no, he absolutely does. He was the right choice after seeing all that footage of all his other bass players, Pepper Keenan, whatever, Twiggy.
Jordy White. I actually think he was the most interesting outside of Robert because he wrote a lot of the big Manson stuff.
Really?
He wrote Beautiful People. He wrote The Dope Show.
Yeah.
Wow. He wrote a lot of Marilyn Manson's big hits. So, you know, creatively, it would have been interesting to see. But I just don't
think... He would have brought more from a writing standpoint.
But I just don't know if there's any room for that.
Yeah.
I don't think there is.
Yeah, I was going to say, would they even let him?
I think unless you're a Cliff Burton kind of guy.
Right.
And that was even early days for James and Lars.
Yeah.
Once the James and Lars thing happened throughout the 80s...
Yeah.
How much room was there for like a big creative personality? Like even Pepper Keenan was talked about.
Yeah.
Which I love Pepper Keenan. And he's the primary writer of Corrosion Conformity. He would go on to do Down with Phil Anselmo. But
right.
would he, and I know him and James are super, James wanted Pepper Keenan to be the bass player. But I mean, how would that have worked out?
Right.
I mean, I would only imagine that Pepper would eventually just kind of get, you know,
feel boxed in.
Yeah. Or bored. Like bored.
Yeah,
with
bored.
It.
Like, hey, look, like, I can play these bass lines to all these songs, but like, I'm here to contribute, but you don't want me to or whatever.
Well, because they never, Corrosion Conformity never got huge. But if you go look at like a Corrosion Conformity show from like even 4 years ago, when they're playing whatever festival and it's their time, he is the star of that band.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's taking most of the solos. He's the singer. He's the primary songwriter.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what's crazy was hearing your podcast with, I'm not going to pronounce
Mike
it
Mike
right.
Gillis.
Gillis. I always want to say Gillies, like Gilligan.
Because it's spelled like Gillies.
Mike Gillis?
Gillis, where he talks about how Lars had a photographic memory of, mm-hmm. you know,
he
James
remembers,
is eating this sandwich and playing this riff. Yeah. Like, that's pretty intense, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, do you remember a year ago when we were in, you know, Frankfurt? And I was eating pastrami and James played that riff. It was pretty cool, I think. I want to hear it again. Like, that's wild, dude. It's also wild that he could actually recall that riff.
There's a
that's
lot.
That's why he was there.
Blew my mind.
It blew our mind when we were talking to him, you know? Yeah. You know, he's one of those dudes that has such a crazy cool story, especially, you know, having worked for Metallica for as long as he did. I mean, shoot, I could have sat and listened to him talk for another couple hours.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, hopefully he'll be on more episodes.
Yeah, he will. So I've heard.
Yeah.
I went and captured him from Las Vegas.
Yeah, he's here right now. Mike, come on. You can come in now.
He's out there with the Bolt Man, with Mom with the Meatloaf. And when Paul's not here, he's with Paul.
That's right. Yeah.
So what's going on with this surf stuff?
My instrumental record.
Yeah.
I talked to you a bit about it outside, and I've talked to Paul about this because Paul is going to mix this record. I have been really stuck as a songwriter for almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Let It Burn came out about 2.5 years ago. You and I did that Shadow song together, which was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And for over the pandemic, you know, like a lot of artists, I think a lot of people probably thought like, man, I've never had this much time
sure.
at home. I'm going to write some cool shit and this and that.
But then there's the pressure of
I mean, I didn't feel any pressure of like, you know, there's like a deadline and things like that. I mean, there's, you know, the future was kind of unknown. So it was like, all right.
But there's that pressure of like, oh, well, you're a musician and you don't have anything else to do.
Yeah, right.
So
for sure.
Everyone should have come out of this with like an amazing album.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And you know, there's part of me that maybe expects that from other people and other bands. It's like, oh, surely, you know, whatever band can write something awesome during this time.
Meanwhile, most of the time spent for us was like existential dread of like, what's going to happen and what are we doing?
Right, yeah.
That's not usually the easiest duress to write under.
For sure. So yeah, for me, I just, you know, I did a cover EP last October and it was fun. But every time I sit down to write songs, like I would get borderline depressed because I have the music. I even have a melody. I know what I want this to become and I can't get there. Mm. And I don't know what to write about. I don't know how to write, you know, I don't know. I just got to this place where I was just like, I just can't finish this. Yeah. I can't even start it. Like I have the music, but like lyrically, like I've always been very slow with lyrics because I've never been the singer in any band I've been in. I'm always the drummer or guitar player or something. I don't have the experience you guys do as songwriters writing lyrics.
And yeah, so, I was going to say, did you ever try forming a song in the form of a question? Like, can I touch you?
Well, I try, but that song's taken. So...
When you went to register it, yeah, you ran into some like interesting copyright.
He wrote the whole song and then he's like, dang it.
It was lyric for
like, and lyric I thought about changing it to can I touch you .. there.
Yeah.
But you know.
Or can I touch you here, but here didn't have the same gnash.
It didn't. Or I also thought of can I touch you way over there. And that, you know, too much distance in the song.
Right.
All that to say, like I was, especially at the beginning of 2021, I'm trying to write songs and I'm like, I haven't even finished a complete song. Like this is, and it was making me honestly depressed. And so, one night I was watching the show Narcos, which I was just obsessed with. And the music in that show is so cool.
Yeah, it is.
And around that same day, John Tyler, who builds amps that we both use in our studios and Clint has one as well. Mm-hmm. He had sent me, basically like a more intense reverb tank for one of my amps. It had like three springs in it. Like it's just, it's a lot of reverb. And so I installed it, you know, one night and I cranked the amp one night and turned the reverb up to like, you know, 8 or 9. And I just started making something up and I filmed myself to send it to him. Just like, hey dude, reverb tank works. It's awesome. And that little thing I wrote in there, I was trying to write something like the show Narcos.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a really cool little melody thing. It was like when you turn up the spring reverb a lot and then you mute the strings and it's kind of clean, has this, you really hear that spring reverb come out.
Yeah.
And that night I was like, fuck it. I'm going to write an instrumental record. I already had a couple surf songs I wrote like 3 years ago and I just updated those. And I just wanted to have fun. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a good time. Music is
always.
This is my mantra.
You shout it out of bus windows sometimes to cops.
I did in Las Vegas in a parking lot.
I bet that guy still thinks about that.
I hope he does. I hope he thinks about
that. He's like, remember when that guy said, have fun always?
I mean, like I think when sometimes he's like not having fun for real, like he's like, things aren't, you know, he had a bad day and he's just not having a good time. I think he thinks like, there's a guy one time who shouted out of some obscure anonymous bus window. I didn't even see his face.
Right.
But he told me once, have fun always.
Always.
And then he just starts generating his own fun.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this.
He starts juggling or he looks at videos of clowns.
Why is that not a Metal Up Your Podcast shirt?
Is it? Is it not?
It's not. No, we've never done that. We never had that shirt.
Well, guess what? It will be.
So let it be written.
It will be next week.
So let it be done.
Have fun always shirt.
I do think it needs. We did want to do a shirt of the Paul shirt originally. I wanted to have like the shadows of like dreads. And say Paul. We tried to do it. Remember?
Yeah, I think I mocked up.
You mocked
something.
It up.
Yeah.
Really?
I did.
So we need to figure out a way to do a have fun have always. That doesn't just say have fun always.
I was trying to tell someone about the podcast a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there was someone else at the event that I was at that was like, no, it's a big deal. Like they have a lot of followers. And so we're talking about it. And I was like, how can I convince them that this is a big deal? And I was like, you know what? I became a internet meme or whatever in the podcast of the Paul ? So they put it on a shirt.
!
And mm-hmm. people bought it. And they were like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, and I went to go see Metallica at Bridgestone Arena.
And a dude was wearing it.
And I have a picture of me and Metallica playing, and way up in the seats is a dude wearing a Paul shirt in all in one photo.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that at that moment, the person was like, wow, it is a big deal, isn't it?
One of 20,000 people in that arena, yeah. and you guys connected.
All the shows that I saw on that tour, I would always like in between like little moments be looking for Metal Beer Podcast shirts. I found several in the wild.
Yeah, they're out there.
You're making a difference.
Well, listen, I've said it before. Let me just run down a quick little list.
Is there a button if I do the hero thing, do you press a button and then the song plays?
Yep.
I wish we had that.
Well,
I would say that you two are heroes.
And then a hero comes along with the strength to carry on, and you cast your fears aside.
Let me run down the list if you guys don't mind. There's just a brief list.
Let's hear the list.
Mahatma Gandhi. I'm not done.
Okay.
Martin Luther King Jr.
Uh-huh.
Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm.
Harriet Tubman.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. And we're at the top of that list.
Yeah.
Not the top of that list.
Well, who's counting? Not me.
You're forgetting a few people.
Okay. Malcolm X.
Sully, the dude that landed the plane in the Hudson.
Sully,
Captain Sully.
You said
Sully. Doc Brown, who invented time travel.
Doc Brown.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
1.21 gigawatts.
So I'm excited about that album because I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. So I mean, to kind of wrap that up, what got me out of this funk and I know the word depression is used a lot, but I really was. There was nights where I was by myself in HQ1. Trying to write lyrics and melodies to what I'd written musically. And like 2 hours later, I have like one sentence.
Can I touch you there?
Right. And, but I mean, it was just like, I was like, this is supposed to be fun. Yeah. There is pain in music and there is suffering and there is, you know, trials you go through and to get to that point where it's okay. Fuck yeah, we did it. This is awesome. But like, you know, we all started playing guitar because it's fucking fun.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And like, I just really wanted that and I missed it. It's been a few years since I've really had that natural feeling. So yeah, I mean, I start writing these instrumental tunes and like, I wrote like 7 or 8 songs in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And every night I go down to HQ1 and work on a tune. And by the end of the night, I'm just like on cloud 9.
That's
and I
awesome.
Feel like I really needed that. So
that's the way it should be, man.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's important to find that, sure. to rediscover that.
Yeah. And you guys can, you know, both attest to this is that's something that constantly happens. It's not like, you know, one time in your musical life, you get bummed out and then
right.
you have to find that. Your musical career, whether you're quote unquote successful or not, if you're writing music and making music, I mean, it's going to be peaks and valleys forever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
You know?
So what about you, Paul? You always help people make stuff. We've talked about before on Tangent Cities, like is the Paul Moak record that may be, like you were saying before, you have a few muses in your studio where you're able to have some connection points.
Right.
When it gets, I mean, making albums isn't always fun.
No, sometimes it's a lot of work.
It's just work. And
yeah.
I think that's kind of what Bob Rock's frustration with the Phil Tausch shit was, is like, Bob was tapping into like, okay, every time we hit a roadblock, we can't like do a big meeting about our feelings.
Right.
Like I see the value in it, but.
But you know what I loved about the interview was him saying like, you know, I've always viewed Bob's bass playing as like, all right, this is my chance to be in Metallica and making mm-hmm. fun of him for that.
Mm-hmm.
Mike kind of lined it out as like, man, I love you guys. You guys are hurting.
Right.
You need a bass player.
This is a way I can love you.
Yeah.
Right.
It was an act of love. And that was like a huge statement to me.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I feel very comfortable in my role of helping other people make records.
Yeah.
I think that I write songs. They're for me. I have no ambition of releasing them in any way for other people.
You don't ever have a sense of like having this amazing studio of like maybe a day that not a lot's going on or a couple of days where you're like, I'm going to like get a couple of buddies or even if it's just you and like track them in a great way. Or have you done that?
No, I haven't.
You had like 2 awesome musicians sitting in front of you.
If only, yeah, had 2 lap steel players.
It's not going to happen.
I don't have
the hat. Get a Panama
though.
Hat.
I'll tell you why it's not going to happen. First of all, take the pandemic, for example. perfect time. If there was any time I was going to make a solo record,
it would have been.
It would be the pandemic.
Yeah, sure. But you were.
And what did I do?
You were busy though.
I took 50 days to do an Instagram show to talk about record making.
Yeah, that was.
I watched
so valuable.
I watched every one of them.
I did too.
I've made so many recordings with you over the years, and I still tuned into all of
those. That's funny.
I loved it.
But I think that speaks to where I'm at.
Yeah,
is that right. Instead of spending my time making my own songs, I wanted to talk about making records. And I think it helped me understand that what I care about is making records for other people.
Yeah.
It's not martyr thing or anything. It's just, I'm not interested in making my own music.
Well, it's what you do. It's what you're great at.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I hope that I am. I think that maybe one day there will be a reason or a need to make my own musical statement. But for now, I get way more enjoyment out of helping other people.
Yeah.
And I mean that sincerely, in that I feel like I'm giving the best of what I have to offer when I'm helping other people.
It's too bad Richard Marx couldn't see that.
My God, I was literally about to make a Richard Marx joke.
All right, last thing before we split.
Okay.
It's been a good Tangent City.
Yeah.
It has.
And we don't have to go too long on this. It seems like the boys have like at least recorded 10 songs that I know of. And maybe more. Maybe they're like,
I mean,
really.
As of this week, Kirk posted a photo of him and Rob out, you know, behind HQ.
What do you guys think is going to happen? What do you guys think this next record is going to be?
I'm worried.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to. We're not going to run into another Saint Anger here.
No, not at all.
Nothing what are you like worried that. About?
When
you're worried it's going to be too good.
No, no, no. When you played the James interview with the Hunting Show,
mm-hmm.
and he was talking about how the writing process was facilitated, as in
that was pretty wild.
It's very wild.
Okay, we tried to talk about it on the show, but I'm glad that we can maybe talk to you. So he had Greg Fiddleman running his rig,
yes,
from LA,
yes,
in Vail, and Lars, I think, had an engineer on site at his house in San Francisco. Right. That's pretty wild,
and awesome. I've had many interweb writing sessions and Zoom whatevers over this pandemic.
Right,
hard to find the magic in it.
Nothing will replace being in the same room at the same time. Right. So here's where I'm worried. If they use that as the genesis of ideas, and then they all went into HQ and actually put out the blood, sweat, and tears to make a record,
flushed them out.
We're going to be fine.
Well, I mean, that sounds like what they did.
If they flush it out, flush it out.
Yeah, right, exactly. But think about like the couple like online things they did, or like did like the pandemic a show. They did their live stream with all the screens behind them.
Right.
They've been in HQ quite a bit.
Yeah.
I would say since last fall. Ish.
So maybe I should have more faith in them.
I think you should, man.
Because still a short amount of time for a Metallica record.
That's right. The other thing.
Judging by like their last 15, 20
sure.
years.
Sure. I just think that.
But it does sound like they got in the room together.
For sure. Yeah. And I think they're doing it more frequently.
Hmm. You know what I love was in Mike's interview when he talked about how they may have only jammed out for 3 hours, but the whole day was like...
They were like, had a burst.
It was a percolation up to that point.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I love that, dude. I love that mentality of like, when we actually strap on our instruments, it's go time.
Yeah.
It's all creative.
No joke. Yeah.
There's no filler. It's all just inspiration and these bursts of energy.
We have a saying in the biz, no filler, all killer.
Yeah.
Let's also consider this with Metallica going from sharing riffs or ideas over Zoom to maybe spending a little extra time when they're, hey, we're filming this thing in the studio, but let's also work on some tunes.
Right.
To now it seems like they're there somewhat consistently. My main thing is, who's at the helm? Greg Fiddleman.
Yeah.
But think about this. Mike Gillis said he was the riff keeper.
Yeah.
Well, Hard Rider was his last album.
Right.
Who took over that job? Greg?
Hmm.
Whose job was it now? To go through 4,000 riffs and pick the
4,200
the 4,200 riffs to whittle it down to whatever's going to go on Lars's iPod.
It's Avi's job.
Well, and
probably Avi.
Here's where I said I'm worried.
He'd be great at it, by the way.
I'm worried because Hardwired was, to me, Metallica's finest statement in terms of that the Black Album came out. It will never be topped, right? Load and Reload.
Reload got close.
Load and Reload are awesome, but they can't it's touch its own sauce.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Of course, yeah.
For sure.
To go back to Black Album sauce, but connect it back to early Metallica, also have like the engineering and the weird sounds of Load and Reload. To me, it was such a good statement of Metallica's whole career, mm-hmm. but it took how many years to create? So that's the only thing that's got me on edge is how short of a time period we've had between, I mean, they were touring, they weren't in the studio. They were touring up until the shutdown, up until James went to rehab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That time period to now is a very short amount of time for a Metallica album.
Yeah.
Compared to their previous works.
And that's without them really being together the whole time.
Right. But we don't know if on the World Wired Tour when, they would be home for 2 weeks.
Right. They could have been working on stuff.
Like, I mean, of course, James is going to spend time with his family and stuff, but like at night, like, hey, kids are going to bed, like wife's tired, she's going to bed. I'm going to go in my music room and like come up some riffs. Like,
you know what?
You might have a bunch.
Well, you know what I think it is? It's a great opportunity for Greg, who's got a couple albums under his belt with the boys. They obviously trust him and respect him. Great opportunity for him to put a little fire in their ass of like, let's not do the 800-year Metallica cycle. Let's do an immediate.
Let's put it out.
Well, right. let's why don't you guys write with a little more immediacy? And see what happens.
I mean, we're at 5 years. Almost, well, it'll be 5 years in November since Hardwired.
But they usually don't write when they're touring.
Right.
Sure, sure.
I mean, maybe some riffs, but they usually sort of hunker down for like 3 years to write. But because they have the money. They basically have the resources to just, they have their own studio.
Of course, yeah.
But if this is a situation where they're like, well, we want to make the best use of this time. Okay, we'll reimagine Blackened. We'll reimagine Creeping Death. We'll prepare for this benefit gig.
Right.
But maybe when they were like, hey, we're like writing material. Kirk's sending us shit. Me and Lars are doing some Zooms. Greg might have worked up enough trust, to your point of trusting, to be like, why don't you guys fucking really write it right?
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe
it
so.
It might be something different. I mean, it'd be the first time they did that.
Dude, I would be so excited if there was a new Metallica album in the next year.
Oh my gosh. Be amazing.
I mean, I think it's probably going to happen.
I think it comes out this Friday.
Unless they're going to sit on the material and do like a 2022 year of makeup gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
because they got to make
which
up.
Which is possible.
They got to make up South America. They got to make up Australia, New Zealand. Yeah. They got to make up festival dates.
A lot of bands are pushing dates off to 2022.
Especially the biggest ones.
Yeah.
Because the liability for bigger shows. I mean, a lot of.
Is that an insurance thing?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Bands that are doing clubs are like fine, but if your deal is like 22,000 people a night, you're dealing with just liability and
for sure. Yeah.
You got to deal with safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Taylor Swift of the world, the Metallica of the world, are probably going to wait till 2022.
Probably. Jeez. For sure.
Well, and on that note, we got to get out of here. We did it.
Yeah, we did it.
We did our first Tangent City of 2021.
Tangent City Part 3.
This is the first one.
First one of 2021, part 3 total.
Yeah, the last one was just after Christmas.
Yeah.
Wow, dude. Yeah. Time flies.
Time flies.
When you're in a pandemic. Time
flies when you're in a DeLorean.
Fly like an eagle into the future. All right. Well, let's say bye. I mean, what should we do? What should we do to let everybody know that everything's going to be okay?
Everything's going to be okay, my babies.
Just say that.
I think it's important for the listeners to know that wherever they go.
And whatever they do.
We'll be right here waiting for you.
Peace.
Adios.
Thank you.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.